Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Storefront Church is the new play from John Patrick Shanley. It's set like his award-winning play Doubt that kicked off the trilogy. This play concludes in the borough where he was born, the Bronx. So we jump ahead from a 60s-era Catholic church in Doubt to the Bronx in the thick of the foreclosure crisis with this play that centers on a conflict between the Bronx borough president and the minister of the storefront church of the title. The play is in previews now and opens officially next week at the Atlantic Theater Company's newly renovated space. And playwright and director John Patrick Shanley joins me now. So great to have you back on the program.
Nice to be here.
The trilogy of plays, as I said, is called Church and State, and this concluding play really engages the theme directly, doesn't it, with the politician and the minister in conflict?
Strangely enough, one of my inspirations for the play was Victor Hugo and his novel Notre Dame, more popularly known as The Hunchback of Notre Dame, where you have, through one event, you can talk about architecture, finance, religion, and sort of capture, if you can, the spirit of the age.
And in the play, the borough president is Donaldo Calderon, played by Giancarlo Esposito, who people may know from Do the Right Thing or Breaking Bad. He's the son of a minister, although not like the real-life borough president, the son of a minister and state senator, best known as a vociferous opponent of gay marriage. but how much did the real current Bronx borough president, Ruben Diaz Jr., inspire your character?
Oh, I would say it was actually more the previous borough president, Adolfo Carrion, who I found to be a compelling figure.
And who then went to work for the Obama administration.
Yes, yes. Some might say was sidelined to the Obama administration, taken out of sort of the New York political scene and put out to pasture.
And he was a compelling figure to you because?
Well, I thought he was charismatic. He had leadership qualities, and he was in the midst of many forces, some of which perhaps he didn't completely comprehend.
Two of the other characters in the play are bankers, the loan officer and his boss, and the threat of foreclosure that hangs over the family friend of the borough president and over the church is very present. You couldn't have known about the impending financial crisis when you started the trilogy with Doubt in 2004. When did you decide to end it there?
Well, I think that I've been very interested from the beginning of this trilogy with hierarchy. And so first I sort of looked at the place of faith and doubt within the hierarchy of the Catholic Church. And then in defiance, where does faith belong in the military, which has always been an interesting question to me. And now, where does faith belong in urban society and in the corporate structure that influences so much of our daily lives?
One of the amazing things in Doubt was the way you gave Sister Aloysius, the culture warrior slash nun who tried to withstand the onslaught of the 1960s anything-goes ethos, you gave her some of the best arguments, some of the best lines, while your audience was probably more in tune with the opposite view. Were you trying to do that with the bankers and politicians in this play?
Well, you know, I mean, we're living in a very confrontational society at this time. And I think that I've been interested in writing plays that appeal to both Democrats and Republicans, or another way to put it would be human beings, and to find that common ground for discourse that seems to be lost on the national scale.
So what is the fundamental question that you would say you're trying to raise in this with respect to the housing bubble and the theme of the trilogy, Church and State?
Well, I think that my real question is where does spiritual experience in a communal setting belong in our society now? And I've been very interested in storefront churches for a while because it's kind of an invented church. It's whatever you want it to be. You just rent a little candy store or a laundromat and you turn it into a church and you can preach whatever you'd like. And I guess, you know, sort of my question is, well, if you could do this, what would you preach? What would be a way to have a communal experience that you would find not compromising and at the same time rewarding?
So what's your take on storefront churches? Do you see them as places where charlatan set up shop or a real kind of grassroots religious or spiritual experience where people without much money can actually go and pray and gather?
Both. There's hundreds of storefront churches in New York, and you know, going into any one of them is like an anthropological journey to God knows where. But certainly one of the sort of untapped treasures, somebody should just get a camera and go around and take the survey.
Even the outsides.
Yeah, there's a lot going on over there, you know.
And did you go inside a number of storefront churches?
Oh,
did
yeah.
you ask and gain access?
Oh, absolutely. You know, they're very welcoming. And sometimes they, you know, look completely mystified as to why you would want to be there. You just, you know, if you seem like an outsider, these people tend to know each other. But I was, you know, going up to the Bronx, to East Tremont, where I grew up, and the world has changed a great deal since then, and sort of seeing what's going on now.
And the Bronx has changed demographically, obviously, since you grew up there. And the new play reflects that. There's the Latino politician, his family friend, her secular Jewish husband, the African-American minister flooded out of New Orleans, and then the bankers, one with an old Dutch name. Do you feel as connected to the Bronx and its struggles today?
I certainly do. I also feel that the Bronx is really the most legitimate part of New York at this time. I know that's like an incredibly inflammatory statement, but it is the only part of New York that is actually part of mainland United States. And I feel like the people there are a little bit more grounded and a little bit more out of the rat race and more involved with community than the rest of the city.
Of course, you know, people could call up and make a case. I won't even make the case for Manhattan, which is definitely its own animal. But people could call up and say, hey, Queens represents the entire world. Immigrants coming from all over the globe and settling in Queens.
Absolutely. But, you know, if I wasn't chauvinistic about the Bronx, what would I be chauvinistic about? I'm allowed to be a proponent. Certainly Brooklyn speaks loud.
Staten Island. Leave New York and see America just by going across the Verrazano Bridge. The idea of history marching, though, is definitely there in the play, in the Bronx. But whether it's going forward is called into question.
Well, certainly in Victor Hugo's novel, it doesn't look like society's making a lot of progress to a more evolved condition. That sort of wasn't his interest. But one of the things that he did with that book was he awakened a new passion for the architecture of Notre Dame itself, and it led to the restoration of this great cathedral. It's a great thing to hold up a mirror to society and ask society, well, what do you think of what we're doing? What do you think of this we're living in?
John Patrick Shanley, his new play is Storefront Church, the conclusion of the trilogy, the Church and State trilogy that started with Doubt in 2004. And your minister, played by Ron Cephas Jones, is stuck in a spiritual crisis, just as the borough seems stuck in a mortgage crisis. He's a Katrina survivor. Talk about being underwater. Maybe that gives him more perspective on what's going on. He's kind of your perspective character.
Yes. And, you know, in economic terms, and I'm very interested in the economy, the world economy, there is the idea that we are at the best thing that we could hope for is eternal growth. And this minister basically asked the question, why? Why is that a good idea? Wouldn't that lead ultimately to consuming everything and a burnt out cinder of a planet left for our children? And I think that that's a fair question to ask about a lot of things. When you don't know what to do, the minister says, maybe it's better to stop and not do anything until you know what to do.
Does the word occupy come up in the play?
It does not. I didn't, you know, I feel that the Occupy Wall Street movement, insofar as I perceived it, seemed to be too privileged. I didn't feel that there was a real, I guess what I'd call otherworldly spiritual power behind it. I felt that it was kind of mundane. I would like to see a different kind of groundswell in the culture that was based on idealism and conviction about real moral forces.
Did you see the borough president character as a stand-in for the president at all? After all, Obama worked in communities like the Bronx when he was in Chicago.
Yeah, I think that the borough president has overlap with Barack Obama. I like to write characters that aren't utterly adhering to any one person in the paper
world.
At the time, but can actually sort of translate to a lot of different situations.
Now, you directed this play, as you did the movie of Doubt. How do you handle conflicts between the two roles, playwright and director? Or does it avoid conflict because you don't have to trust your work to somebody else's hands?
No, you always detest the writer when you're a director. You just why did he do that? Why did he make it so hard? Couldn't he have made it a much easier, better script?
Really, that's what they think inside, deep down, because any director who I think I've ever interviewed just says, oh, I'm so lucky to be able to work with so-and-so's marvelous script.
Yeah, but they're lying, you know? They're just they're tearing their hair out in private, and then, of course, you put the best face on things. I don't have to do that because I'm both a writer and director, and this isn't a movie where you're, you know, selling something night and day.
It's not a musical, but you do let Tanya Pinkins sing one song, a hymn or a spiritual, and she basically sings the whole song. That's unusual.
Yeah, well, you know, it's a very beautiful, compelling, and mysterious gospel song called I Shall Not Be Moved, which is utterly secular on the face of it, but is talking about standing still in one place and the power of that. And I thought, and also, if you don't let Tanya Pinkin sing at all, you're just a criminal.
And you were last here to talk about the middle play in the trilogy, so I think we're completing our trilogy on your trilogy. And that was Defiance, and it was set on a military base in the South. It was hardly the Bronx. So do you feel like you've tied up the loose ends for yourself on American institutions of military, religious, political now with all three plays?
Well, you know, I think when you're a creative person, it's important not to be too sanitary and not to tie up anything completely.
Because life doesn't really tie up the loose
ends.
No,
and I'm very interested in what comes next, and I have no idea what it is.
You know, we're in the midst of a series on this program called End of War, and we're asking many guests to respond to the question, is war inevitable, or can humanity ever abolish war? Have you ever thought of it at that level?
Well, I think that, you know, war is a formalized version of something that has always existed and will always exist. There have always been soldiers. There have always been thieves. There have always been the violent and the nonviolent. And I believe that all of these types of people, these archetypes, will continue until the end of the world.
Mm. One of our more pessimistic answers. You are done with the trilogy now. This has consumed you for nearly a decade, maybe a decade, if you count from when you started writing. What comes next?
Right now, I seem to want to write a bunch of one acts. I think that, you know, my attention span, along with everybody else's, has been broken into 1,000 pieces, and I want to try to do a series of really, really fine plays that are about 20 minutes long.
Can you produce a play that's 20 minutes longer? What do you do, 3 one acts or 4 in an evening?
The nice thing is that I don't really have to know. I can do my stuff, which I've always done, and then you turn around after you're done and say, well, you know, how do we do this? But never while you're writing them.
Somebody told me you might make Doubt an opera.
Actually, I'm involved with the Minnesota Opera right now. I'll be flying out there on Monday. We are well underway, and the premiere is in January of 2013.
That's exciting. Is this the Philip Glass, Robert Wilson model of historical opera?
The composer's name is Douglas Cuomo, and he, I think, hails from a different school of writing, composing than Philip Glass.
John Patrick Shanley, his new play, Storefront Church, is now at the Atlantic Theater Company's newly renovated theater. It's in previews, and it officially opens next week. Thank you so much for coming on with us on each of these occasions. It's really a delight to talk to you.
Oh, it's great to be here. Thank you for having me.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC.